What's up, man? We here, Shop Talk, man. We're going to talk a little bit Shop Talk before we get into what's going on with the Canes. A lot going on, man, but we're going to keep it sports-wise, man. Got some college coaches who are quitting. I'm not going to say quitting, but who are leaving college coaching to go to NFL ranking because of the NIL and transfer portal situation, man. It's crazy because you just had a head coach say, man, I don't want to be a head coach no more.
Right.
I don't want to coach these kids because they're too entitled, I guess, which is bad for a grown man to say kids are too entitled when the money is there for them to get. But I don't know. I just feel like a lot of college coaches, they're quitting because they don't have the substance to sit and say, hey, okay, well, if this kid want to get paid, he should get paid. They kind of still thinking like the kid shouldn't get paid, but I don't know, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think if your mentality is these kids don't need to get paid, college football is probably not the job for you. If you're the kind of coach who, you know, I just want to coach the game and be a coach, and that's why I'm going back to the NFL, because I mean, obviously NFL players get paid more than most of the coaches, or some of the players do. So based on that, I could understand a coach deciding to, well, you know, I just want to stick. I don't want to recruit a kid, get him on campus, and then besides the NIL and the transfer stuff, but now I got to recruit him every year, keep him on there. Like if that grind's not for you, or you don't have the mentality to understand that's what it's going to take, and especially you're not doing it with at an SEC or a Big Ten kind of school, you are a school that if I build a great receiver up, you know, a bigger school is going to come at the door. You might feel like it's not for you. So I could understand why some coaches, like what Hapley at BC did, where he just wants to coach football, but it's a change, and you're going to have to adjust, you know, how you coach these young men. I ain't going to call them kids. I'm going to call them young men.
Yeah, you got to call them men. They mean, because they getting paid, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, the funny thing about it is, like what you're saying, is having to recruit the kids, the men over after you got them on campus. The one thing I think a lot of the college could benefit from is the fact that if you get a kid come in his freshman, sophomore year, he does good, he decides to leave, that opens the book to say, let me get another kid out of high school, freshman, sophomore, and do good. Because a lot of the colleges are switching to saying, well, we don't want to recruit the high school kids anymore.
Right.
Well, that's a benefit, you saying, well, at least let me go ahead and develop this guy now. And then other players will see that, saying, hey, let me go to that school because they developed me as a freshman and I get the opportunity to transfer.
Right. Like if you're coaching a lower eight, yeah, if you're coaching a lower ACC team, like a top MAC team, for example, or a top American Conference team, you could tell yourself, hey, you come to my school, I'm going to develop you. If you need to go, fine, you can go. I'll get the next guy. If you set that as your expectation and how you're going to build your program, that we're going to make you better, I think there's some sustainability in that as coaching, because if you coach at this, let's just say USF, this is South Florida, you're probably not going to win a national championship there, but can you be the program that gets that two-star, low three-star Florida kid and able to build them to a four or five-star by their junior year, where maybe you decide to keep him, make him stay for that third year, or if he leaves, you become an attractive spot for that next kid or that dude who's playing at a smaller D2 program that might want to come to your school. But you can become an attractive college option without trying to win a championship, because ain't with so many schools to win a championship anyway.
Yeah, so what it is basically now the G5, the smaller schools become JUCO, basically. They become the JUCO level. I mean, and it's not bad, you know what I'm saying? Because like as you said, a lot of those schools aren't expecting to win the national championship. So it's like, it's not bad. Get the players while you can. I mean, that's just the landscape of college football right now. Get them while you can. and try to develop them while you can. So that could bring up, oh man, it's a kid from Wisconsin that's didn't really get recruited high. But I could get him, come in freshman year, does good, sophomore year does good, then he wants to leave. That makes me look good because I developed him. You know what I'm saying? So now, say a school fires their coach, they saying, wait, well, that coach developed those type of kids we might need. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you know, I get it. Works out in the end. Right. Or if you're that quarterback coach at that school you're talking about, I developed this two-star kid. I got him to go transfer to Auburn because they needed a quarterback. So that might be a incentive for a coach to perhaps boost his resume as well. And that's just the nature of, to me, where college football's headed is you're going to have, you know, you have these playoffs, you're having, you know, we're having this conference realignment stuff that isn't going away. It's continuing. And it's just programs have to be smart of who they are or where they stand. You know, you can't pretend like we're going to win a championship and or nothing. You might need to decide if you're not a school that's going to collect a fat check like Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt don't got to win a championship. They don't got to try. They're going to get a big check anyway. They're SEC. Right. But if you're a different kind of school, if you're like I'll say a West Virginia, you have to make a choice of what kind of program you're going to be. You're probably not going to win a championship, or if you do, it would be you somehow snuck in the playoffs and you've made a miracle run. But you have to decide how to build your program and how do you create an atmosphere that make coaches want to be there, make players want to be there, keep the fans interested. So it's not easy, but it's just a matter of universities just got to be honest with where they stand.
Yeah. I think, you know, for the most part, we could probably speak about this too, the conference realignment. It's basically going to be a two major conference college football system coming pretty soon. So it's like, if you don't get into those two conferences, you know what I'm saying, you already out. You know what I'm saying? So you should be like, hey, let me at least recruit these high school kids where we can get them in for a year or two and develop them. Because you're going to get left out of the big major programs. They'll have the 12-team playoffs outside of being in the major two, you know what I'm saying? Maybe four gets in, and that's pushing it. I don't even want to give them four. I'm looking at three. So, yeah, you just got to keep recruiting those high school kids regardless if they leave or not, man.
Yeah, I agree, because we need that pipeline of high school recruiting to survive, because these kids need a chance. They need a scholarship. And it's like some of these programs have to make a choice. You're either going to be that program that recruits all, you're just going to fill your roster with the portal, or you're going to be that team that's like getting freshmen and getting those kids and building them up. And maybe that's the type of program you are, and you can win that way. And that's where we're headed. But with conference realignment, there's only so much pie. And these schools are going to have, and they have to understand that the networks is going to dictate the schools that get in. And it's probably going to be like 36 to 40 teams, perhaps, split two ways, almost like AFC, NFC. So,
yeah, I'm looking at like 24 teams tops per conference. If they go more than 24, then that's when it starts to get a lot of trickier, because you got to say, well, if it goes to 30, that's 60 teams. You're almost kind of saying you're trying to have a NCAA basketball bracket now. You know what I'm saying? I speak with the college coaches, I speak with kids, and I've been telling kids for the longest, look, go to a school where you can get developed at, because you have this opportunity to transfer. You know what I'm saying? And if they're going to keep allowing it, then do what's best for you. You know what I'm saying? Don't always get stagnated in going to the big school. Because remember, the big school is always recruiting to get better. So you go there for a year and you feel like and they feel like you're not benefiting for the program, they going to recruit somebody to come in front of you.
Right. And even like a or even if like if you're a regular college kid, right? Do I want to go to this big university or do I want to go to this school that's got a program that fits me that I have a chance to succeed in? I think sometimes these kids, they get that dream offer and they go to that school and then for 2 years they're doing nothing and then they just hit the portal and it's like now you're a junior, you haven't gotten too much better from your freshman year. And now these schools aren't looking at you the same as you were out of high school. So I feel you on that. You gotta find the right fit for you. I think that's especially with nowadays with quarterbacks, you have to find a program that's best for you. Just going to a school for the sake of going to it. I don't think these good schools are gonna take them kind of kids anymore.
Hey, listen, the official National Signing Day is Wednesday, and it's crazy because it's so many kids in high school who don't have opportunities. You know, that's crazy. You know what I'm saying? Because guess what? Now these small schools, you're supposed to be out here hunting for these kids, these same kids that's not getting the opportunity. You know what I'm saying? So it is what it is. It's college football. I hate that it's happening because coaches are just saying they don't want to deal with it. You know, that's like they want to keep it with the old school. Like, nah, man, this is the new football. You know what I'm saying? So it's either you going to deal with it or you just get out, which is what they're doing. They're saying, let's get out.
Right. It's either adapt or not.
Yeah, adapt or not. I don't want to compete with Ohio State because they can recruit and they can get the portal kids. I don't want to compete with the other. You got to get with the program.
Yeah, I feel you on that, man. So I think, you know, just to kind of wrap this up, you look at what's going on the next 2 years, you're seeing this stuff with ACC looking to break up. You're seeing this weekend, Monday and Tuesday, you got the Big Ten and SEC are trying to set the parameters of the future. Because everybody thinks they just want to leave the NCAA. They really don't. They would rather stay in the NCAA, but kind of get to operate how they want, because then you got somebody else. It'd be a lot easier to still be under the NCAA, but be able to operate under set rules. And let's say the way I see it going from what I'm hearing is, let's say every Big Ten SEC school, every football player, every scholarship player, the left tackle at Ohio State will make the same money as the left tackle at Vanderbilt, right? Just in terms of the money they get from the TV deals and stuff like that, that type of money. That's what the Big Ten and SEC are trying to lock up with now. We're going to figure out how much money we're going to give to these kids so everybody got something. And from there, then NIL is going to be its own thing. So what that's going to do is your Ohio States, your Bamas, those type of schools are going to be able to, you know, use NIL to get the higher kids, but your lower tier SEC Big Ten schools will be able to compete with like a certain ACC school because they know at the end of the day, they can tell an offensive lineman, you will get this much at our school with the TV deal. So that's why you're seeing Florida State, Miami, North Carolina, some type of schools are trying to figure out how they can get over there, and it makes sense but at the same time they can't cut out the entire NCAA. Like, you have to give, you know, that Big 12 school a chance to win the championship, because if you don't, then it's going to be antitrust laws and stuff like that. So that's the other part people don't realize. They can't just make it 36 teams. Only 36 teams can win. You have to make access for a Texas Tech, West Virginia, you know, a USF to make a miracle run. I mean, obviously, will it happen? No, but you can't take away the opportunity, the right to, because those schools won't be able to function without it. It's like them having their own playoff wouldn't work because nobody would pay for it.
Yeah, that's the way we're going at, man. But it is what it is, man. We're going to get into some hurricane.
What is this?
It's 26 degrees. We'll be right back.
Canes, man, had a big elite prospect day last week. They had, but not them, but Battle Miami was down here this past week, last weekend, and then this weekend, Hotbed had a 7-on-7 tournament. I didn't go to either. I had a whole bunch of stuff, man. I got a bunch of stuff that I'm dealing with, trying to put together. But yeah, man, Battle Miami went good. A lot of talent went left from there, went down to the campus. The staff feeling good about building those relationships. End up getting one commit. Lamar Williams, a big 6'7", 280 guy. He's massive, big. He's big. Four-star commit out of, what is it, Gaddison, I guess that, that's Leon County, or it's the same thing, or it's different?
I think it's Leon County, Gaddison, I believe so. I'll double check. But it's definitely, if it ain't Leon, it's the county over. Yeah, it's the Panhandle for sure.
Panhandle. It's definitely Panhandle. So it's in their backyard. We got them out their backyard. Officer Lyman, obviously, we never question Mario by Officer Lyman, him and Coach Murban by Officer Lyman. They feeling good about a whole lot of players, man. One kid I've already gave my prediction to was DJ Pickett, number one safety in 25. I said he's going to be a hurricane. I'm starting to get more intel on more recruits and how they feeling. And you go from there, man. Other than that, yeah, Miami is starting to make some moves as far as recruiting for 25.
That's good, man. It seems like Mario's really gotten his rhythm in the kind of establishing the program recruiting wise, to where now he's got his first two classes under him, and now he fixed maybe his biggest problems that he had, that he inherited, and now it looks like he's kind of locking in and focusing on, like what's next. Like everybody said, all right, for this class we're gonna work on the secondary or linebackers. And it seems like Mario just he builds from within out. He gets the trenches right, and then from there, he's working on it. So based on what happened with Battle Miami, do you think that's gonna be something that every year is just gonna be the way Mario starts off the recruiting season, as long as that Battle Miami's in play?
Well, Battle Miami, their first big tournament is always in Miami. So what Mario does is he uses that to benefit the program, because it's in Miami. Every kid want to come down to Miami. So hey, let's get these kids to come visit the campus while they down here for them 2 days. You know what I'm saying? It's easy. We ain't gotta pay.
Right.
So Miami benefits, and Mario's benefiting it, making it beneficial for the program. Yeah, it's gonna be the norm. As long as Mario here, it's gonna be the norm. He's gonna always make things beneficial for the program.
Right, and it seemed like Battle Miami, it became bigger for Miami this year because we had quarterback from Milton, Georgia there, and they won the tournament, right? Cam Newton team. Can you speak on like the impact that had for recruiting or just for how it shined a positive light on the program?
Well, okay, so one thing it did was it kind of put a spotlight on the future of what you want to have at quarterback. Now a lot of those top receivers are saying, well, they got a quarterback. We would like to play with that guy. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of been the negative range for recruiting at Miami, was they don't have a good elite quarterback, but we got one with Luke, and they saying, hey, that guy can play. He's Cam Newton's vouching for him. Everybody's vouching for him. So now the receiver's saying, hey, we can possibly go play with that guy now. So yeah, that was a good thing. His team won. They beat South Florida Express, probably the top 7-on-7 team down here. They beat them in the round to go to the championship. So, yeah, that was definitely good for the program.
Man, that's excellent, man. Yeah, like you said, that, and the funny part is what I'll point out is one thing you got to give the staff credit for is identifying talent. They're not relying on rivals to tell them a quarterback four-star. You even look at Judd, the quarterback who was negatively recruited on. By the end of the day, he actually became a four-star in one ranking system. And if you just look that he went from going to a winky offense to going to like a real program like Warner Robins, where he developed so much in a year. So it makes me feel a lot better about the program that we have coaches. And that was one of my biggest complaints in the past, is I felt like our coaches were just going off ranking sheets. I want coaches who see talent. I want coaches who go to a high school practice and they can see, even if they weren't recruiting a kid, they can see talent on the field. They don't got to be told, oh, you got to get this kid, or we're here to see this guy. I want coaches that they see the talent from a football perspective. You know, I never coached ball, but I imagine that if you do coach, you have to be able to see something on the field that's different than me going to the ranking book and say, oh, this kid's in the top 10. Let me give him an offer.
Yeah. We got talent evaluators up and down the staff, along with Alonzo Highsmith. You know, they're looking at these kids very closely and seeing the character of the kids. Can these kids develop into great men, great football players? Can they be team players, stuff like that? So, yeah, Mario's staff, they definitely not worried about the ranking system. Obviously, it looks good for the fans. You know, the fans could talk about, oh, well, he's a four-star or five-star, stuff like that. But, you know, the staff is pretty doing a pretty good job. You know, aside from that, you know, losing Coach Tim Heiss, Tim Harris, not going to say it wasn't a big deal, but it's not a big deal. You know, obviously, we don't have a running back coach right now. I don't think any running back prospect, we're after, I think the one guy, he commits in March. And so we'll have a coach by then. So it wasn't that much of a big deal, but it's a big deal because you do lose a good recruiter who knows South Florida to Central Florida. and, you know, just sit and wait. You know, I'm getting a lot of questions about when we going to hire a running back coach. I mean, y'all been on Mario since he got here. There's no rush with that guy. He's going to hire the guy when he wants to hire the guy.
Right. And even with today's college football, the carousel really hasn't even settled yet. So he might wait until, you know, spring practice is settled to maybe find a different coach. Maybe he figures out somebody's unhappy, or maybe he's waiting to hear from a different guy. We don't know what it is. Do you think somebody internally will get a promotion, or do you think when it's all said and done, he'll get someone external to join the program?
Well, I think he'll bring in somebody that's not with the program. A good point that you said, he could wait till after spring settles, you know what I'm saying? And just let somebody who's on the staff keep that role until after spring. That could be possible. But yeah, I think eventually he does bring in somebody who's not with the staff. You go that route. Don't ask me to give y'all no names, because I have not heard anything. I can give y'all names who I would want to be the coach, but that's just me or somebody else saying, you know, that thing, Mario, he definitely keeps that to his, you know what I'm saying, his pocket. So we'll see. You know, March 4th, I think, is the first day of practice, March 4th or March 4th, okay. One of those. But again, it ain't, we'll get a running back coach. You know, that's.
I'm not worried about running back coach.
Yeah, that's the one position that you don't have to go crazy about. Like, oh, we don't got no run. Okay, man. Running backs been learning how to run the ball since they was little kids. You know what I'm saying? So that's.
And there's always a coach who's hungry that could be a running backs coach. It's not as like versus a quarterback coach where you have some flexibility there, and that's definitely nothing I'd you know be hung up on. But you know how the fans are nowadays; they need that instant gratification all the time. So in terms of how are the new incomers on campus, how are they looking so far?
I'm getting the same news, the same vibe as the freshmen the previous year did. Amado Blunt is looking, they saying they trying to compare him to Bane right now. I'm like, man, don't do it. Let him let the kid live up to his name. But they say he's working like how hard Bane did. JoJo Josiah Trader, yeah, he's probably going to be one of those true freshmen to start. I'm just keeping the buck. I think he's going to take one of those starting spots. Zaquan Patterson, another one. He's going to be a freshman that's going to work his way into that starting role. Yeah, man. And Chris Humphrey, he's every bit of advertised. Yeah, the freshmen are working hard, and that's the thing. Like they not coming in to say let's just sit and wait. You know what I'm saying? They saying nah, we coming in to battle. You know what I'm saying? Then the two quarterbacks that came with Cam and Reese, and then Jakari. Oh man, that's a battle. It's getting intense too, because all three are like, I ain't just finna sit and let you win.
They all dogs, man. Like, you know, we kind of just that window to talk about that interview, but one thing Jakari showed me is that he's a competitor, if nothing else. And that is something I respect, especially from your quarterback, because what I took from that Rutgers game that was the best thing was he showed me he was a leader on the field, and players were following him. It wasn't a situation where it seemed like players would ride for him if and when he ever became the starter. And he does it with his work ethic. And he's just a great kid, man. And I'm excited for the future of the program, because this is really what we needed. We needed not, oh, it's your job this year, then my turn. No, we all trying to get it. And whoever don't get it, that's fine. But iron sharpens iron, especially in a quarterback room. I don't think in today's college football you can afford to have a player, any position, that a kid don't feel like if I don't perform my best, I'm unyankable. I think anybody should feel like your spot can get took, especially at University of Miami. If you're not performing to a certain level on this team, then there's somebody behind you who's chomping at the bit and they're ready. And that is refreshing to hear about, you know, Reese staying on the program. Cam is here, and it feels like we're finally going to get a positive reset with that quarterback room, where people are ready for the position versus having to be forced to start.
Yeah, you kind of get a sense of it goes back to when Derrick King first got here. You know, when Derrick King got here, we all knew he was going to be the guy. But he had two guys who had no game experience, but we figured, okay, we can build behind Derrick King because these guys will learn. So you got Cam comes in, he has game experience. You got Reese, he has game experience. Jakari Emery has a little, you know what I'm saying, a few couple of games experience, but you're saying, well, hey, even if Cam wins, which we think is going to happen, then you have three quarterbacks who can learn behind a game experience quarterback, the one who already has it, just not on this level. So, yeah, you need that. You need that. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't want to lose a quarterback and then the drop off be so major, so drastically, where it's like, oh shit, boy, this season is done.
Right. And that's been Miami's problem in the past, where sometimes you see other schools and they lose their starter, and then it's a dude you never heard of, or a guy that if you're not following that program, you might not know who he is, but the team don't miss a beat. And that is where you need that quality depth. You need competition to every position. So if you do have an injury, or heck, if we have a game and you know what, we're up big, I want second string the ball out too. I want people hungry to get in the game. That's what I want for all the positions, but definitely I feel like this is probably the first time where, I mean, I don't know how long, that I feel like the quarterback room, and it might be Ken Dorsey, Kyle Wright, to where the quarterback room was set in a way that there is a starter and the person behind is ready if need be, versus we got a guy who's a starter and we need him to play all 11 games and not get hurt. And that's just not a way you can operate and be a 10-win program. We can't expect 10-win expectations and we ain't got but a half a quarterback that we can rely on. I think that's been killing the program.
Most definitely. The depth. And, you know, Mario came and he established depth. We still don't have the elite depth that we hope yet. But he's establishing that we have depth where you can lose a player and then the next player will be ready to step up. So, but yeah, man, I'm hearing good things as far as workouts. Battling that linebacker position battle is getting, it's going to be real intense because you got maybe six guys who don't want to sit in the pen. They all want to play. I'm looking forward to that one, that position the most. With Kinko, Wesley, Popo, Marcellus, Chase Smith, Bobby, Malik Bryant, even the two freshmen out there, you got Cameron and you got Darius Hayes. That's going to be a major battle. I've never seen our depth I've never seen our linebacker depth like this since maybe the championship days with DJ and Vilma, and you had linebackers behind them. Yeah, I don't think we've had depth like this at linebacker in a long time.
I'm thinking maybe the Randy years, you had a decent linebacker corps then. The type of guys who just were good college players. Like, I remember, like, Tavares Gooden, Glenn Cook, them kind of guys who were just good college linebackers that made it to the next level. But I hear what you're saying. But man, that's refreshing because linebacker, to me, that's been the weakest part of the defense for as long as I can remember. And if you're weak at linebacker, that means that's the heart of your defense. That's what, you know, if your linebackers are weak, man, you're going to get them North Carolina games on them. So just hearing that there's that level of competition, and what I like about linebackers is, guess what? If you don't make that first team, guess what? You could be a special team star with that same mentality, and they'll find room for you on the field if you ball. And so if you know you're not a starter, it's not like whoever the starting linebacker is going to play 100% of the snap. So it's nice to have that depth, keeping people fresh. And, you know, just it seems like across the board, almost every position we're discussing, maybe outside a corner, where it just feels like we have this competition, this healthiness at these positions where in the past we've had this deficit. And, you know, hoping that, you know, it works out versus, all right, you're at practice, you're now seeing depth. So, you know, Mario's doing his thing there.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think the theme for this offseason, this spring, is going to be battle. Battle, just say battle, because every position is open for a battle. Even quarterback, running back, offensive line, tight end, right receiver, defensive line, linebacker, secondary. I think the only guy who really don't have to worry about his job being taken are the kicker and the punter. I think those two guys are just, you know, ain't nobody going to beat them out, you know what I'm saying, until they leave. Other than that, everybody else, boy, if you slip up if you want to.
Right.
It's getting back to that moment where I remember, you know, the good days when the players would be like, man, I don't want to go to the bench, boy, because I might not get back in the game. It almost get back to that point.
Definitely. Two more classes like this, and we'll have a full synergy in the roster. So that sounds good. In terms of we're talking about all this healthy competition, these new, you know, players coming in. How do you feel the roster management works out in terms of what kind of attrition are you expecting? You know, how does Mario attack it going into the after spring ball when that portal window opens back up? And obviously everyone knows about wide receiver. Maybe we want one more wide receiver in the portal. Is there any other portal need you guys think we'll need after spring besides wide receiver?
I'm going to need some more secondary players, safeties and corner. You're going to need probably some more defense alignment. Right receiver, they'll probably look at a tight end and running back, you know, also. Just to see, you know what I'm saying, because we do have running backs have been injured, so it's like you just can't be too safe. But I do expect 10 to 12 players on the team that won't be here after spring. hey, man, it is what it is, man. You just have to understand this is college football. It's not just a Miami thing. It's a college football thing. So,
right. So, and that'll probably give us some flexibility, and hopefully those players, either they get their degree or if they don't, they'll have a chance to hit the portal and get back on a program, you know, before the summer. In terms of us going into year three, what should expectations for Miami Hurricanes football be in year three of the Mario Cristobal era?
Man, to be honest, year three, it got to be 10-plus wins and get to the ACC championship game. If it's not that, then Mario starts to get in the hot seat talk, because you went and got the quarterback that you wanted. He recruited 3 years, actually, good to help depth-wise. You brought back the coaching staff, mostly outside of the running back coach. You brought back the coaching staff. Everything is in place for you to do 10-plus wins. So I think the expectations have to be 10-plus. If it's not 10-plus, then, yeah, we got some issues outside of – some real major issues.
I would agree with that. I feel that 10 wins. I mean, when you normally do the math, you would say, well, if you go from 5 to 7, you know, nine wins sounds okay. And usually I'm Captain Optimism. I would be like, well, that's improvement. But if we will coincide this with the schedule, if you look at the schedule for the program, I feel like it sets up very good for 10 wins as long as everything goes right in that first game in Gainesville on August 31st, that first game. What I like to do is kind of let's break down the first 4 games, and then we can, you know, kind of then go to conference play. But if you look at those first 4 games, you got at Florida, it's an away game. And then you have at home for FAM, at home for Ball State, and then that last non-ACC game will be a Saturday at USF, which is an interesting game for obvious reasons. It's an in-state school. They're going to play the best game of their life. It's on the road. It'll be at Raymond James. So that's a unique atmosphere, you know, for Miami, for the program. So in terms of them first 4 games, that needs to be a 4-0. I don't care. We shouldn't lose to Florida. We shouldn't lose to USF, especially with getting Cam Ward. But I think that 4-0 sets the table well. How do you see them first 4 games going? How do you think them 4 games could help us in the schedule?
I agree, 4-0. I don't think Florida, I mean, they down. They down right now. They coach haven't figured it out as far as him being the offensive coordinator and the head coach. Their defense isn't as good as they think. I don't know why they think they have a good defense. But yeah, they lost a lot of players, a lot. So yeah, 4-0. South Florida, they have a quarterback that may worry me a little bit, you know what I'm saying? Because he does run a lot. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, offensively, we can do what we want against them. And then defensively, I think Gildrey will figure it out fast with them. And then you said, well, we got Ball State and who else?
And after Florida, it's FAMU and then Ball State, and then the 4th game is USF. So we got in between the Florida schools, we got home games against FAM and Ball State, a MAC school, Ball State.
That's wild. We play what? Florida, FAMU, South Florida, and Florida State. Dang, they should have put the other Florida schools on the team.
All we need is FAU, yeah. We've been good.
They should put FAU and FIU and Central Florida on that rock, on that schedule. But yeah, no, I think 4-0 is probably, you know, it's going to happen. Not probably, it will happen. Now we got to figure out how to do after the 4. We did 4-0 this year. You know what I'm saying? So we got to figure out how to do 4-0 again.
Oh, perfect segue. So going into that Saturday, that game is a Saturday the 21st at USF. Our next game will be our first conference game of the year, will be a Friday night game at home against Virginia Tech. that's the first conference game. We got our rival back on the schedule, and that will be the first game of the season. So we're 4-0 Friday night. Hopefully, when they schedule these high school games, I hope they move a lot of games to Saturday, knowing that Friday night game will be big for us. So in terms of, so I'll just break down the next two games. We got Virginia Tech at home, and then we're going to travel to Cal, and then we have one of two bye weeks. The way the new schedule sets up, we have two bye weeks this year. So we're going to have Virginia Tech at home and then at Cal. Talk about those two games. When I say the matchup, not player-wise, but just how you just feel about playing those two games.
I think it's good, you know, for us to get back into that one, because that was a rival that I thought they should have kept. They kind of down right now. So I think, you know, we should come out with the win with that one. Cal, they not really too good. I think the only issue that worries me is the traveling that far. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if the team is, I mean, obviously it's not the season right now, but traveling that far for a game, I don't know. They just got to show me that they could do it. But as far as the talent level for both teams, you know, Miami is way over the edge with that. So,
right. I agree with that. And usually if you do a cross-country travel, that might be the first or second game of the year usually, or it might be like the last game of the year if somehow the schedule switched up. So get on cool about the Cal game is, it's obviously we're traveling across the country in the middle of the season. Usually that is something that happens at the beginning of the season usually. So for us to make that travel, the team will have to be prepared. What I'm interested too is, will it be like a 10:30 game Eastern time, or will it be like a game where it's early, but it's like maybe a 3:30 kickoff, but we're jet lagged and it's almost like a noon kickoff and we're kind of jet lagged being there. So I'm curious. I'd rather it be just a night game and we get our legs under us and let it be a night game in Cali versus us playing a noon kickoff in Cali. I'd rather it be later in the day, because that's just me. But it shouldn't matter.
It's going to be like one of those midday games. I mean, as far as Eastern time, so they'll probably have the game around maybe between 2 and 3 West Coast time. So around, it'll probably be like 4 or 5 for us over here. It's just kind of weird, but.
Yeah, I just know the ACC network really well, and they're going to slap that bad boy on at 10:30 at night, just so they could get a Miami game that late. And I think they're going to try to take advantage of that. So I could see us ready. It should be 10:30 at night, and our body clock saying it's 10:30, but we kicking off out west. So we'll see what happens with that. But like I said, like you said, those are one of those things that the team hasn't experienced before, so we'll have to adjust to that. And then after that, we have a bye week, and we're going to need this bye week. Because after that bye week, we get off the bye week and we're at Louisville, at home for Florida State, at home for Duke, and then at Georgia Tech before another bye week. But those four middle games is going to decide our season. At Louisville, at home for Florida State, at home for
Duke. Who be scheduling them games? Like, how would they give us those four games, like, back to back to back to back? Like, whoa. Well,
those are the four. And that's why, like, when you look at the schedule, it sounds real sweet. We're going to get that bye week, and then we're going to really, like, our team is going to have to be at its best off that bye week, because the first game is at Louisville, and then that game is going to be a battle. We know that. And then we play. Then they're gonna have us play at home against Florida State after just playing at Louisville. I, you know, it is what it is. We should be no excuses. But that is gonna be an interesting stretch to where, before I even talk about Duke or Georgia Tech, if you can be undefeated off that bye and you survive those two games, then you know everything you want in front of you. Forget 10 wins. You might get 12 wins from what we're talking about. Because if you talk about 10-2, those are maybe your two losses that people might try to say might be the possible losses. But you have those games and another bye, then it's Wake Forest, and the last game's at Syracuse. So essentially, that at Louisville game could set the table for the whole season. If we can win that game and then have that high of a win, that you're not going to celebrate too hard because you play Florida State next. So it's one of them schedules that
we see. That's October. The Louisville game is October 19th. Okay, October 19th, and then the Florida State game is the 27th or
26th. Yep.
All right, so you got those 2 weeks, which basically dictate the season. Those 2 weeks dictate the season. You win those two games, or at least come out with one of those wins, you dictate your season. You have either a 10 plus win season, or you don't have a 10 plus win season.
Essentially, and then you want to win those games. So and then after that game, you're going to have another emotional game because you're playing a Duke team that's led by Manny Diaz. A lot of people probably forgot about that.
The Cuban Bowl. We're playing in the Cuban Bowl, huh?
You got the Cuban Bowl after that. And then after that game, you're going to have the should have took a knee bowl because we played Georgia Tech again. So those four games are going to be so emotional that if the season spirals, you could lose all four of them games. And that would be old typical Miami. You know, lose four games in a row, middle of the season, or it could be Miami is now, 10-0, and we're the talk of college football. All's on the table with the way the schedule sets up. And I am happy that the biggest game is in October, that everything will be in front of us. But, end of the day, we have to take care of our business. So we go through those games. That Georgia Tech game is an away game. In November, I wouldn't even mention cold, but it'll just be one of them tricky games that Georgia Tech, for some reason, that game, the road team always plays better. I'm never worried when we play at Georgia Tech. That's the reason when Georgia Tech come to Miami, weird things happen. Punters are throwing touchdowns. We're not taking, it's just a weird environment anytime Georgia Tech come to Miami. So I actually rather that game be in Georgia Tech. Then we have a bye week, and then, it looks like November 23rd would actually be Thanksgiving weekend. Wait a second. No, it would not. It would not be. Thanksgiving weekend would be the last week of the season. But you have Wake Forest at home, which would be senior night. And then the last game is kind of like old Big East when you end the season with Syracuse. At Syracuse, we haven't played at Syracuse since I don't remember the last time we played at Syracuse. Like, visually, I cannot remember watching a game at Miami played at Syracuse.
Yeah, you have to go back. And yeah, it's like 2000s. I don't remember either, man. But I'm gonna keep it a buck. I would love to go. I think I'm gonna go to that one because I love Syracuse Dome, man. I was supposed to be playing in that dome every year for 4 years.
You got to go to that game. I understand the history behind that. You got to go to that game.
I gotta go to that one, man. So they have a new coach. It's gonna be hard for him to get his players to buy in. First time head coach, obviously. We'll see how that situation go. The Wake Forest situation, I don't think they. I haven't paid much attention to them. You know what I'm saying? That's like a Vanderbilt level to me. But obviously, they've been good in ACC. Again, I think the Duke Bowl. I don't think. Duke got the same caliber of coaches or players that they're going to have this year. So I think that 2 week span with Louisville and Florida State, man, that dictates the season, man. And then we could go from there.
And I agree wholeheartedly. And everything, like you said, this schedule sets up to where the floor is 10, but I just feel like there's no. It's just if you're 10-2, you pretty much lost the two games. You lost two games you shouldn't have lost. And it's just, I don't know, man. This just should be our season. Now, and I did pull it up, that old Miami-Syracuse game. We won 49-7. We were number one in the country, and we were 11-0. So maybe history repeats itself when we 11-0 when we go at Syracuse. Maybe that's a good omen for us.
But yeah, man. We here, man. 2024. Spring gonna start on March, man. The Canes got four recruits in 2024 so far. I mean 2025. Yeah, 24. The 2025 class. I don't. It's 2024, but this the class is going to be 2025. I expect another top class. I think Miami's actually going to start a lot earlier as far as building the class than they did last season. Between spring and summer, man, you know, Miami can start collecting some names because it's some teams who almost had like 16 names already, which is crazy.
Right. And it feels like Miami has, like I said, Mario's kind of got his foot and he's got two classes in. So now he's not chasing, you know, he's not chasing the relationships. I mean, I know we're still building relationships throughout the state, but it feels like right now Mario's kind of no longer behind the eight ball in terms of recruiting and being, I guess, on schedule with the way he likes to recruit. So essentially, I guess the last thing I'd ask you really quick, I didn't really mention this before. How do you feel this recruiting cycle is going to be, given that Nick Saban is no longer recruiting for Bama? How do you feel that's going to change the ecosystem, this recruiting class?
Well, it changes dramatically because Alabama is not going to have the number two or number one class anymore. So that changes the landscape of college football. Georgia is going to always be one or two. Ohio State is going to be in that count for one or two. Miami is going to be in there.
Looking early, LSU looks like they're going to have a bounce back class too.
Yeah, Texas, LSU. I mean, you know, those schools, a lot of those schools are going to be in it. It's just when you start talking about one and two, you know what I'm saying? We've known that Georgia and Alabama were one and two for a long time, and then A&M had that one season. So you take Alabama out of the equation, Alabama probably still is top five. You know what I'm saying? But now it's open season because now a lot of those players that Nick Saban can get the last minute, you know what I'm saying? Bama ain't going to have that anymore.
Yeah, that might be more of a Kirby move moving forward. But, that seems like we touched on everything today, man. Anything else you wanted to talk about before we call it an afternoon and look forward to this week?
That's about it, man. Everybody who joined us or listening to the show, man, thanks for having patience. You know, we have some scheduling issues, man. You know, it's four or five of us, man. It's always some scheduling issues, but we're trying to get it together. We're trying to give you a show each week. So stay patient. We coming. You follow me, you follow Caneville, you know, there's always stuff there. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, we definitely trying to give you more stuff for 24/6. I mean, 26 to be on 24/6, 26 degrees.
For sure, man. Just to add to that, man, it's just to keep it real with the show, man. Like the reason why we recording today, y'all know I'm usually a teacher. I had COVID. I'm still getting over COVID. That's the only reason why we're having a show right now is because I'm able to just be here doing the show. Prayers, you know, to Larry on his family. You know, he's taking care of some things, holding it down. So we're holding it down for him. And you know, like I said, the parts keep moving, but we're gonna still find a way to bring it to you. And you know, we know y'all missed us, so we're gonna keep moving. And whenever something new in the news drops, if it's Miami related, we'll do our best to get a show y'all as quick as we can.
Yeah, man. Make sure y'all still keep following 26 Degrees on Twitter. Tell your friends to follow it. We soon are going to create the YouTube page where you guys can follow, become members. I mean, subscribe. You know what I'm saying? So be coming there. Yeah, you're sending prayers to Larion, the homie, man. Sending prayers to him and his family. People have real lives, you know what I'm saying? Things happen, man. It is what it is, you know what I'm saying? But we going to continue to keep rolling. So we go from there. Peace.
Peace. Shout out to Mees Wendy Rod. Peace.
We going to let the band deal with this.
26 degrees.